Hey, I'm Martanda. This is Catherine.
Hi.
I'm a young forester. I like to call myself a young forester because I'm learning a lot about forests myself. Mm. Before that, I was in the road service for 4 years. I was taking care of all the roads. Mm. I'm just a little distracted by the wind generator. It's my latest toy, so it's like a test pilot to check out if we can actually have wind generation in Oroville.
Yeah.
Mm. A lot of people have tried doing it.
Yeah.
We always have a tendency of reinventing the wheel in Oroville. And you see, you have fantastic products out there already that's ready-made. So I brought this guy back from America, and I'm trying it out.
Mm.
Now people are like, yeah, right, there's not enough wind, but I'm a bit naive in that way.
It looks like an improved version, no? It looks like
yeah. This is the best you can get, actually.
Yeah. It is.
It's designed for boats,
mm-hmm.
and they made one for the land. But I was living in a forest. And growing up in Oroville, from a barren piece of land to today, we were very, very in tune with the environment and growing up with the trees. That was actually our closest connection, the fruit trees. We were always hungry. And so we would go from one tree to another tree just eating star fruit, guava. They'll never actually get ripe. Catherine?
My name is Catherine, and I'm the Green Group Coordinator, which more or less means I'm an advocate for the farmers and the foresters of Oroville. And I basically help them do the things that they otherwise don't have time to do.
Such as?
Such as.
Longest.
Well, it depends on the issue, yeah. Lately we've been focusing a lot on land because India is developing so fast that the land we want for forests and farms is actually being purchased by private parties and developed faster than we can even react.
Mm.
So, for example, just around the corner from this forest is actually one of the largest patches of green spaces, uninterrupted green spaces in Oroville. And all of a sudden, in the middle of it, there's now a hotel, or the makings of a hotel. And this is really traumatic. So this whole week, basically, I've been focused on what can we do to stop this? Can we work with this private party to build the hotel elsewhere? Can we introduce him to the forests? Do we have legal rights? It's a tricky situation.
Mm.
Just to put you in the orientation, the forest is called Lumiere Forest. And we're in like the north section of Greenbelt, I like to call it. Fertile is our closest neighbor. You know where Johnny lives?
Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be called the Fertile Field because Johnny used to grow his varigo over here. It was just kind of far away to actually keep track of it and all.
Mm.
And then eventually, the space was started by Perumal and Jana. The original idea was to grow a butterfly farm. So the first species that they planted in the south side was to attract caterpillars to observe butterflies. And then they fell apart, the relationship broke, and he took on the place. So he was the original person who actually started this whole place. And it was only 4 years ago that he left Oroville and then I took over. Yeah. And so I wanted to change the name because it was no more a field, and since it's more of a forest, I prefer calling it Lumiere. There's a lot of light, and I want to keep this space open. Because if you look at a lot of forests in Oroville, where people live, like suddenly all the trees are there, and it's a bit dense now, and there's not this open feeling, which I like.
Well, at first you said that you're developing this area. How far would you say are you with this development, and when will the forest be able to take care of itself?
That's a good question, because if you look at the first part that I was just telling you about, the butterfly farm area, that was planted by them in 2000, and if I leave it now, it's fine. I don't have to pay any attention to it. Like I was saying earlier, 2 to 3 years of attention, and the rest is all fine. It takes care of itself. The only problem is people who are, like the neighboring villages, sometimes they need firewood, so they might enter and cut wood. Or you'd have the cows. This is like the national bus stand for cows. It's the highway here. They love it. They all come here. They drink water from the pond and they eat all the saplings. And so if you're not diligent, then they eat all their saplings and they eat this much and it grows this much. And you know, it just slows down the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So just to resume, 2-3 years, my attention is watering, making sure it grows, I may have to prune once in a while, just gives it a straight feeling. And then after that, it's keeping the cows and the villagers away.
I'm asking because I thought like the green group is like a nomadic group, if I can call it like this, that you move from place to place and you take care that, you know, that people don't come in and cut the trees.
The villagers do need their firewood, so I'm happy that they take firewood. Like the lady that works here, she takes firewood.
But it's, you specify which trees.
Right. Then I'm in control of it. I can say, okay, fine, this one has fallen down, go ahead. And the same with the cows. I'm so happy to have cows here. I've had two cows deliver her babies in the forest. It's so beautiful. But it's like, hello, cow. Can you just eat your grass, not the plants? You know, I talk to them, it works, but it doesn't work all the time. It's like, you know.
And have you thought of, like, community outreach project that you have community members? I mean, village people coming here, taking some wood, but maybe planting some trees as well, like an exchange?
Yeah.
Well, so botanical gardens and some of the other forests do that. And they've been tremendously successful, especially with children. And Kichandikulam also. And then there's another, on the farm side, another group of organizations that also have outreach to regional farmers. And are trying to, you know, work with them, learn from them, but also teach them about organic farming, and that, you know, we don't have to rely on pesticides and fertilizers, and in fact it might not be the best thing. So there is that interaction. Here in Lumiere, what we're trying to do is bring people to the forest in other ways. And so I would say that that's namely through couch surfing, which I'll let Martenda talk about. And also, like last year we did a summer camp for kids. And that was really fun, to have just the kids come here and playing in the forest.
Yeah, to find a connection between the city and the greenbelt. Because I don't want it to be just a greenbelt and we live without underwears and scratch our balls, you know. I want it to be a balance between a city person who is sophisticated and us, you know. I mean, look at, we have a wind generator, we have solar panels, you know. What is the difference? Because the original idea of the forest was, Oroville, you know, was a barren piece of land. So the first priority was to actually give a cover for the ground and start water conservation by doing bunding to slow down the water, because at that time when it would rain, the whole Bay of Bengal would be just red. All the red would be just washed away to the water sea. So those are our main priorities, to create shade, water conservation, and to start, how do you call it, regenerating the soil. And so today what you have is the pioneer work. And so species like the work tree, which is not an indigenous species, was introduced, which was faster growing and was sturdier. It's this one over here. It's from Australia, yes.
Yes.
Auricula formis.
Something.
I find it really funny. I love the names. They're all in Latin. It makes me laugh. When you hear the real green belchers, the forests are like, meow, 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 like, what?
But Mother gave names to all the species also, which is...
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the initial phase. And then what they did is started going collecting seeds all around the bioregion, and they were bringing those seeds back. And those needed more shade and more attention, and they were slower growing. It's the dry evergreen species. So I would say 15 years ago, they started doing that. And so the work tree is the first phase, and then the tropical dry evergreen is what we have been doing in the last 15 years. And even still today, like if you look at this whole section here, it is all cashew, dispersed with a variety of trees. And since 2 years, I decided, okay, I'm going to plant tropical dry evergreen forest, because I want a forest after all. Even though cashew is a great source of income for me, because I have to support the workers and little of ourselves with
the work.
So what I'm getting at is that was the large picture of, and so today we have a forest. I can say, look, we have a forest, it's coming, I've planted it, fantastic, but now what, you know, now what? So what is the connection between the city and the forest? And that's where you have summer camps, you have Johnny who has a school, you have Botanical Garden, which has this fantastic outreach program. You have plenty of nurseries that are actually providing saplings outside. And so over here specifically with couch surfing, which I was saying is like our social, 300 years ago, how you had travelers staying in villages, refreshing and moving on. So with that idea, I got introduced to couch surfing. And so we've had at least 30 to 40 couch surfers stay here in the last 2-3 years.
Mm. I mean, there will always be protection work
from right.
the cows, from neighbors, from that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is paradise.
Yeah.
No? We're sitting literally in the middle of a green heaven, so shouldn't we be sharing it? And how do we actually
exactly.
entice people? And this, too, is one of the younger forests. And just to add a prequel to his history lesson, this area actually was once lush forest. It's just that as the local population turned to villages and more towards herding and farming, they ended up overgrazing and, you know, destroying a lot of the vegetation. And then when the British came, they also had this policy that they would give land to whomever cleared it.
Mm-hmm.
So it just encouraged deforestation.
Mm-hmm.
And they used the timber for the boats and the construction of nearby cities like Pondicherry. And so they wiped out this whole plateau. But once it was rich, lush forests.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're replacing, we're trying to get go back in time, you know?
Yeah. So. And, okay, so we understand this is part of the, this is the green belt, right? We are in the
yes.
green belt. Okay, and do you know probably how large the green belt is, or...
These are figures I should know off the top of my head.
I believe we have 1,200 acres already out of 2,200.
More than that is the full green belt. I mean, I can email you the whole numbers also, but it's basically, it's huge. And the scariest part for me is we own so little of it. And so that's
I'll be
why
right back,
you get these developments, these unwanted developments. Just around the corner here also, there's a politician who's created a huge party house. And it's like, what can you do? Because it's also politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we have to buy the land and we have to buy it fast. And we don't have the money to do so.
So.
And the problem is, actually, I think on a political level in India, too, we don't really have the support we need. Like, farmers get free water or electricity to pump water. And so for that reason, there's a lot of coconut farms around here. But our watershed is so delicate, and these people, meanwhile, are pumping unlimited water supply. So it's a disaster. I mean, we can have all these dry evergreen trees, but if we're surrounded on both sides with coconut farms, what's the point?
Mm. I see. So these are the challenges that you're still...
Just a few.
Just a few.
I mean, the other thing also is, I mean, the farms, actually, it's very close to me at the moment. I don't know if you're also interested. But the greenbelt is made of the forests and farms, and I think the farmers also have this challenge of basically having to support themselves in a community where there isn't a lot of support for agriculture. And the forests, too. The budget is so limited, and, you know, unless you start timber plantations, then you really can't sustain yourself or your forest. So, yeah, it's a big challenge.
Mm. And how are you addressing this challenge?
Well, with the farm group, we're actually in the midst of creating a new 5-year plan, and basically that will outline a bigger budget and explain the need for it. And we're really going to try and do a lot of community activism to get people to understand where the farmers are coming from. With the forests, basically, I think the only fundraising initiative we really have is this Carbon Conscious Initiative, where we're basically trying to make people, especially guests, aware of their impact and then encouraging them to reduce the things that do damage to the environment and where they can't reduce to offset. And basically offsetting comes in the form of donations to the forests to plant trees. I mean, we also, the problem is that you only need so much money for planting. You also need money for bunding and fencing and watchmen, and that's far less sexy. So how do you fundraise for it?
I have a question in regards to the 5-year plan called ASAP. Right. One thing on the agenda is how the forest group and the farm group can come together and somehow work on producing enough food for the community. And probably the forest group would have to start thinking about growing more food. Is that something you were, I suppose, thinking about?
Very much.
Mm.
Actually, when you we harvest cashew in summer, you can see there's a few guava trees growing wildly. And so it's really great because you're like in this heat and you're collecting cashews, and then you have these ripe guavas. And so that was really nice to have ripe guavas while you were working. And then they were like, wow, that'd be so beautiful to have a food forest. To actually have a forest with food. So originally I was like, oh, we'll have jackfruits and mangoes and the whole thing mixed and all. But if I look at the existing area, which is 18 acres, it's already planted too much. So I'm going to try to fit in quite a lot of jackfruits and fruits. And then over here we have 1 acre dedicated to farming. Right now it's just 12 sprinklers, but this year I'm going to expand it to 1 acre and have as much food growing as possible.
I mean, the problem, though, with the food supply in Oroville is much bigger than just growing. I mean, certainly the forests have to be producing more. And in fact, one opportunity is also to produce fodder for the cows and that sort of thing. Also, with composting, we have a terrible relationship with compost where we end up, most of us buy from outside of Oroville. And what's the point? We certainly have enough inside, but we need to get better at communicating and working together.
Yeah.
I think that the biggest problem with Oroville's food production at the moment is actually our market, the system. For example, everybody goes to the Portuses and they ask for Oroville produce, and there isn't any to be found. And meanwhile, the farmers are stuck with returns of eggs and returns of produce because there are these standing orders that the Portuses are getting from outside, for example, and there's just a gap. And so right now, a big part of the 5-year plan for the farm group is to develop food links, which is supposed to be the link between the food producers, whether it's forests, gardens, or farms, and the food processors and distributors, whether it's like Naturelmont that makes jams and juices, to actually our grocery stores.
Yeah.
So that link needs to be strengthened.
It's quite a lot, still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it has a lot to do also with us Orvillians. Like, you want to encourage these sort of things to happen, right? But instead, people are more interested in having their Amul butter, for example. You know? So it's a two-way thing.
Sure.
It's awareness towards the people living in Oroville and saying, look, we have those products, please encourage us. And also the establishment of Oroville to be more understanding towards farmers and foresters.
Yeah. I also think there are really great examples, though, especially of, like, urban farming. I mean, what is it, Araki?
Not, I wouldn't say yet, but they want to do that, yes.
Right, and so they've basically established, or the architect has incorporated in the building's design opportunities for rooftop gardening and that sort of thing. So it's coming to Oroville. I mean, food security is entering the consciousness.
Mm.
Slowly.
But surely.
Yeah,
that's good. And what is this meeting about tomorrow?
Once,
I know you have every month a meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once a month, basically, the foresters get together to discuss all of the issues that are facing us. A lot of it is kind of logistical, in which we're discussing problems on the ground, if there's new land bought, who's stewarding it, who's taking care of it. If there's a general problem with the workers, what can the green group do to address that? If somebody wants to build something, we as a group have to decide if it's actually what the forest communities want. For example, we discourage huge concrete housing full of AC and that sort of thing. It's not the lifestyle of a forester. So, yeah, you have to run it by the whole group. Those kinds of issues. Conflicts when they do come up.
And everybody's welcome to come and to join you and listen to the meeting.
Well, I would say the thing about the forest group is there are no rules. And so I don't know how open they would be necessarily to the general public coming, but I don't think that they would turn you away either.
I think if we all know why you're there, then it's totally fine. It's actually a very relaxed group.
Yeah.
It's one of the funnest groups today in all the groups. Like, we have tea and biscuits and we can joke around also sometimes and a little humorous.
I hope all the other groups didn't hear you say that. Because the farmers are fun too, okay?
Come on, it's our reputation.
Yeah, so it is a very relaxed group. Actually, it's a little too relaxed in many ways. And for example, there are some 40 foresters and you're lucky if you get like up to 20 at a meeting.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a problem. The farms, on the other hand, they have much better attendance because, first of all, there's only 13 of them, officially. And second, in order to be part of the farm group and therefore eligible for the perks of the farm group, like the revolving loan, you have to attend the meetings. So there are different structures between the two.
And you think you can implement such a structure as well for the forest group?
No.
It's finding that balance between that structure thing and being so organized. Like, you have other groups have an agenda, no? They know what they're going to talk about. No, forest group is...
Secretly, though, I keep an agenda in the back of my notebook, and then I make it sound spontaneous at the meetings.
Yeah, she often does the note-taking.
So...
So, and when do you publish or when do you release this information that you come out with?
Both groups send it first to the group themselves for any revisions, edits, misunderstandings, whatever. And then both groups also publish in the News and Notes, which is the community newspaper. And because they're published in the News and Notes, they're also available online.
Don't you feel sometimes really secluded and isolated or...
I love the isolation. I love being at the end of the world. But otherwise, yes, we're very much connected. We have a telephone, if that's what you're getting at. And we do have a solar fridge. We have a washing machine, which is a power-saving one. Because we are on solar and wind power, right? So we have to be very careful with that energy. Like, we're really in tune with the wind and the sun and all that. So we know that if there's not much sun today, then we're not going to be doing a washing, for example. Or we won't be using the computer as much. Catherine's more dependent on the internet than I am.
I won't take offense, don't worry.
It's.
I mean, it also goes down to the water, too. If it's not windy, then you don't take long showers because it affects our water. I mean, we're completely, in tune with nature. But at the same time, I mean, it aggravates me when people say, oh, I want to live this lifestyle so I can't live in the greenbelt. It's unreal. Basically... You can live in this place on alternative energy and still have the luxuries of modern life.
Mm.
So would you say you're self-sufficient or self-supporting?
What's the difference?
Self-sufficient means that you generate all of your energy that you need for, to maintain your lifestyle. And self-supportive means that you support whatever you need. You can generate your own energy to support your needs.
I think it's a little both.
Yeah. I mean, if that's the right answer.
Energy-wise, I think we're absolutely fine. It's just a matter of what your needs are. If your needs are high, then I probably need 10 batteries or something, you know?
Right. If you need a big TV and an air conditioner, then... Okay, yeah. You can still do it on alternative energy, actually, but you need to be really smart about it.
But that's more want rather than need.
Well, that's an ongoing
debate. That's where the debate goes on.
I would have to agree with you, but you'd be surprised at the arguments that I hear. So, because we generally, as a policy, discourage current in the greenbelt.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it brings a certain lifestyle also. I mean... Like, I had to think, like, I would have liked to have a super deluxe washing machine, but because I'm on alternative energy, I went for the power-saving, top-loading one without water heating, you know? Stuff like that. So it sort of keeps it in balance, somehow, being still in alternative energy. And, of course, the financial aspect, but it's somehow more... I like it. I like being off the grid. I like being independent.
And we don't know anything about power cuts.
No.
You know, everybody suffers and complains. Sucks to be them.
And it forces you to be in touch with the sun, the wind, and the water.
I would like to know if it's possible to produce biodiesel here.
Yes. People have done it, and some farms especially are continuing to do it.
Yeah.
Another interesting project that people are looking into is biomass generation. So they actually now have domestic biomass generators, which can generate for a large household or a community, a small community. And you just have this little machine and you feed it with branches, leaves, some people say bamboo, and it produces your electricity. It's like in Oroville, look how much we have laying around. It would be a good use for it.
Okay, so that would be another proposal or for another project.
That's the thing is there is so much to do and not enough people, time, energy, or finances. But Yeah, I think that's part of the beauty of Oroville, though. It's a giant playground for ideas, a petri dish for social entrepreneurship, you know? You just have to carve your own way.
Oh,